Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 352 of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Adam by myself today. I want to say happy 4th of July for all of those of you in the United States who are celebrating. And also, from a pop culture standpoint, happy Stranger Things Day, as this is the day that we can all return to Hawkins. So I want to let everyone know if you are very into Stranger Things, which I know a lot of us are, once you're done binging it, if you go to overdrive.com, we have a Stranger Things read-alike list. So if you're looking for books to read once you've finished the entire series of Stranger Things, you can check that out. Today's episode is an interview that I did with Danica Stone back in BEA when I was in New York City. Danica is the author of a book that's been out for a few months now called Switchback, which is a kind of human versus nature story of two teenagers who get lost in on a mountain hike with their class and then have to try to survive. It's an awesome blend of, again, this trying to survive in the wilderness and also trying to better understand yourself as a person and a teenager. And Danica does just a great job with putting in all the human emotions that teenagers have while also being in this very real and very serious situation. I talk about this on the podcast, but I read the book in one sitting. It's really quick. It reminds me of things like, you know, a Jack London novel or The Hatchet, just those books that you can't wait to see what happens next. And it's a story that will keep you guessing, and you'll just wonder how these two kids are going to survive through all of the hardships that they go through. So Danica and I hit it off really, really quickly. She's just a very warm spirit, a person who, within minutes of meeting each other, felt like I was talking to an old friend. So, and I think that comes through in our conversations. She's just an amazing human being. If you want your days to be better after listening to this, go get her books, but also follow her on social media. Her presence is very positive and warm and wonderful. Today's episode is sponsored by The Great Courses Plus. As book nerds, one of our favorite things to do is explore unfamiliar territory, new worlds, fascinating insights, fresh perspectives, and The Great Courses Plus is a fantastic way to do that. With the streaming service, we can pick up a new hobby or build our knowledge on virtually any topic that we want to know more about. There's things like the Great Palaces of the Ancient Worlds or The Legend of King Arthur, both of which I've checked out. They even have how-to courses on everything from cooking to stargazing and just so much more. There's thousands of fascinating lectures to explore, all presented from award-winning experts who are so passionate about what they teach. And with the Great Courses Plus app, you can escape into a vast world of knowledge at any time. You can watch these courses. You can listen to them just like you're doing with this podcast right now. Whatever works for you. One that I've been checking out lately is, if you are a long-time listener to the podcast, you know that I'm a distance runner. And lately, I have been going through some issues with my knee where I'm not allowed to do any impact running, so I have to do all sorts of other things. And what did I do? I went to the Great Courses Plus, and I did a little search in their health and fitness area, and I found a really great bunch of lectures all about yoga, and there's all these yoga instructions, and so that's been really helping me out as well. You can empower yourself with knowledge by signing up for the Great Courses Plus today, and they're offering our listeners a special limited time offer of an all-access one-month trial completely for free. And in order to get the offer, you have to sign up using our special URL. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/probooknerds. Again, that's thegreatcoursesplus.com/probooknerds. So we'd like to thank the Great Courses Plus for sponsoring this episode. Their service is amazing. I really think you'll enjoy it. In case you missed our episode on Monday, I really want you to go back and check that one out. It's because my co-host, Joe Grunewald, wrote a second book. And at time of this release, it is now available. It came out Tuesday, and it is called Reading Behind Bars. And it's all about her life before she came to Overdrive as a prison librarian. So that was Monday's episode. Her book is now available. Go borrow it from your library. Go place a hold on it at your library. Go order it online or your local bookstore. It's amazing. I'm so proud of Jill, and I'm so excited for you guys to check that out. If you want to get a hold of us, you can go to professionalbooknerds.com, or you can find us on our social media at ProBookNerds. Shoot us an email at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com, and if you haven't done so yet, if you have a second, we'd really appreciate you going into iTunes and giving us a 5-star rating. It really helps people find us just a little bit easier. So it takes 2 seconds, and it makes our day. Okay, that is all the housekeeping I have for you. I hope you guys enjoy this episode, this interview with Danica Stone on the Professional Book Nerds Podcast. Hey everybody, it's Adam, and today I am so excited to be joined by Danica Stone, novelist of the well-known books All the Feels and Internet Famous. Her latest book, Switchback, is an adventure novel that, just telling her, I finished literally in one sitting. I legitimately couldn't put it down. It's available now, so first off, Danica, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, Adam, thank you so much for having me here. It's so cool.
And seriously, congratulations. This book is so fun. I love it. It's so fast-paced. It's so just... I hate when people say that I was like on the edge of my seat, but I literally was. I was like leaning forward on my couch. Like I couldn't put it down. It's so good.
Thank you. I had so much fun writing it, and I can always tell if a book is flowing well if I can't stop writing, and I need to get to the end of a scene, or I need to get to the end of a chapter, and that was totally this book.
That's amazing. So we always like to start by having our authors kind of give an introduction to the book, so I will let you kind of tell as much of the plot as you want about Switchback, so I don't spoil anything.
No worries. So Switchback follows two teens, best friends, Vale and Ash, and they're off on this phys ed adventure kind of overnight hike that they have to do as part of their phys ed program. Now, Vale loves camping. She's like thinks that's great, but she doesn't get along great with her classmates. She's aero ace. She experiences a lot of bullying, so she's a little leery of going. Ash, on the other hand, is a gamer. He gets along with everybody. He loves his classmates, loves everyone, but he just is like terrified of the outdoors. And what happens is very quickly the weather changes, as happens in Canada a lot. They're in the mountains and they end up going off track. So the majority of the book is actually them trying to survive this very real experience of being lost in the mountains.
It is. So I mentioned in the intro, you've written a couple of popular books about the internet fame and fandom. So I'm curious, this is not that at all.
No.
So I'm
no.
curious what made you want to kind of switch gears a little bit.
I think it's really important that you tell all the stories that are kind of in your heart to tell. And I like live in the mountains. So, and this area where they get lost is actually where my grandpa used to trap back in the 1940s.
It's so amazing.
So it's like a really, like it's a place I've been. And I am totally like the biggest fangirl ever. And I also like camping. So I think it's possible to be both. And I love the idea of like, what if you have these teens and their best friends, they obviously use technology as we all do, and we take that away. Because even nowadays, in this park, most of it you can't get reception.
Yeah.
So even if you have a cell phone and you're lost and you've broken your leg, like you're not going to be able to call someone. It's just like a very different, isolated place.
Well, and I love that the two things that you really, really love are one thing that is so interconnected to society and the world and everyone all around us, and then the other thing is just a complete removal of all of that connection.
Absolutely. And I think that's good. And I bet you I'm not the only one who's like that, too. Yeah. Like, lots of us have these different parts of us. So I really hope people love coming along on the adventure with Ash and Vale.
Oh, and I'm the same way as you are. I, like, obviously, we're a digital company, so I'm always connected to everyone at all times during the day, and there's nothing better than like going out for a run on the trails and I just have nothing with me and I'm with my two dogs, and it's like I can't talk to anybody. It is so good. I completely agree. I really am curious about your writing process for this book, because when it comes to like human versus nature stories, I feel like the stakes have to increasingly get more and more stressful and difficult, and so as I said, I was on the edge of my seat at the end of every single chapter, and you were talking about that when we were writing the same thing. But did it feel like a challenge to have these increasing stakes? Like, were you writing them as you were thinking of them, or did you plot them out ahead of time?
I'm sort of like, I guess it would be a plotzer.
A plotzer.
So I do some plotting. usually I leave it open, like if my brain wants to go a different direction, knowing it could be edited later. Mm-hmm. But what I usually do, because I also write thrillers that are like for adults as well, and usually for them, I got in a habit of I just list everything terrible that could happen before I write anything. I did the same thing. What are all the things that could go wrong if you were lost? And then I use that when I do my kind of very loose plot. Uh-huh. And I say, okay, well, first, it really sucks if you have to go to the bathroom in the woods and you have no facilities. Kind of sucks if you're hungry. Kind of sucks if you're cold. And then I just put it in order, getting worse and worse and worse. Like, what are some of the animals that you could run into? What if you have, like, you're genuinely in danger?
Yeah.
And that kind of became the loose plot. And then what happens is sort of, you know, your brain just takes over.
I don't want to give, like, a night giving spoilers, but I have to imagine the survival rate of what happens to your main characters. I was like, all right, this is really happening. I don't know that they're going to make it through what you put there. Like, I almost felt bad for them. I was like, man, Danica is just putting them through hell.
I am, but at the same time, I gotta tell you, like, my dad had a confrontation with a bear, and he really didn't think he was gonna walk away from it. So, like, having them run into animals in the time of year that they would be starting to get ready for hibernation, like, that's realistic. But yes, of course, I push the stakes to an extreme. But hopefully, as you're reading, like, you could realize, like, well, this situation could have gone one way or the other.
Yeah.
And you just, like, push it and push it to make it really fun to read and just keep those readers. I want the next page turned.
Oh, yeah. I honestly, it was almost like in my mind, I was like, what is going to happen to you next? I felt so bad. You mentioned your dad having a conversation with a bear. And
yes.
So you have, like you said, background in hiking, camping, and I think I saw on, like, your website or somewhere, you guys used to go through, like, these kind of torture-y hikes.
Yes,
sort of
yes. Okay. That's literally what my siblings and I called them.
Okay,
torture
so
hikes.
Tell me about these.
Okay, so first of all, my family is from Waterton. So this location, when you're reading the book, like, literally, my grandma was a little girl in this place. My great-grandfather, who had come from Sweden, actually built the house that we now have a cabin. So all through our lives, like, our family was just like, oh, yeah, we're going to go on this hike. And we'd be like, how far? Dad would always say, oh, it's just over the next hill, just over the next, like, little ridge.
Uh-huh.
And he would lie to us the whole way until we were, like, marching and it was, like, nightfall. He'd be like, okay, we're going to camp here and continue tomorrow.
Oh,
so I love taking what is that experience like and just kind of, like, channeling that into a book. And as kids, I'm not sure I appreciated it, but it totally, Dad was always like, oh, it'll build character.
Well, and I love the fact that, like, you guys, you literally called them these, like, torture hikes, but now you said that you still love doing
yes,
these kinds of things.
Yes, I totally do. And it's the same with my kids. Although I, you know, perhaps I'm not as mean as Dad was, because he was just like, when I was a boy, and he would just, you know, tell us these things.
That's, well, we did the same thing where I'm from in Cleveland, Ohio. We obviously don't have mountains. It's a little bit of a bummer, but we have what's called the Metro Parks, and it's this, we have, like, it's like 50,000 square acres, that's the right one, of parks, and, like, it's, if people come to Cleveland, you're in a, this, you know, decent sized city, and, like, 5 minutes any direction, there's these incredible parks, and you don't even feel like you're in the same country.
Awesome.
And we used to do this with my uncle. We would have an annual get lost kind of hike where I'm the youngest of four, so we'd take all four of my siblings, and we would literally go into one of the metro parks and go off a trail and just see how far we could go.
Yeah.
And looking back, wild be inappropriate to take, you know, kids ranging from, like, 15 to 7 and not have any, like, supplies or anything. But now I spend my time with my dogs, always in these trails.
Exactly. So I think it's, like, you get this love of the outdoors from experiencing it. So obviously your family is the same kind of thing. Yep.
That's, I'm curious, something that I imagine had to be really challenging as a writer is, there's the overall majority of your book is with these two specific characters.
Yes.
It's just them dealing with nature, but you manage to do it in such a way where they continue having conversations and it doesn't ever feel like it's just them by themselves. And I was thinking about the book Hatchet that I read when I was growing up, which is one kid and nature.
Yeah.
And I was always impressed that it made me want to continue reading somehow. So did it feel challenging to have, like, more or less, you're in this one setting with these two characters?
No, and it's just because I really like to explore who the characters are, and I like to do it with conversation. I don't like to just backlog. Here's a paragraph describing what happened. I like to just have them talk about it. And as I'm sure everybody knows, when they're talking to their friends, like, if you just hang out, like, any old time, like, crazy things come up. Like, you're telling me about the stories of these, your torture hikes when you were a kid. And it just, things lead to the next thing. And I was thinking, you know, like, when you're in a situation where you're just lost and you're scared, that other person is everything to you. And so all these little events that from your past might come up, and you might just find a way of talking about it. And so I loved exploring them through their conversation and then throwing all these crazy physical events at them to conquer.
Well, and also, it, you know, they're obviously good friends before all of this happens, but it, when you're put in this such a dire situation, you really do have to rely on the person next to you and just say,
absolutely,
like, okay, well, I'm have to trust you entirely.
Exactly. And I think especially for the character of Vale, that's something she has to learn. Mm-hmm. She's very anxious at the beginning. Like, she has one best friend and she's very scared of being left, and that is like this thing that she carries. Like, she doesn't want anyone just letting her go. Like, she just kind of clings on to that. And by the end, we see her changing over the book. Like, this experience isn't like a negative. It's obviously hard, but she actually comes away stronger, and I love that.
And there's a scene in the middle of the book where they do get separated for reasons.
Yes.
I won't say that. And it is like heartbreaking. Like, she like wakes up and she's completely by herself, and I'm just sitting, I literally was like on my couch, I was like, oh no. But I feel like you have to have those emotional beats.
Yes.
In a book.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's important for her too, mm-hmm. to realize, like, yes, here I am. This is the situation. I need to pull it together.
It sounds like, from a writing standpoint, like, I don't want to say that you didn't struggle to write this book, because writing a book is hard. But it's just, it sounds like this was something that you were, like, excited to wake up and write every day.
Absolutely. And it was neat because I was writing it over the holidays, like the winter holidays. And so it was just snowing outside my window, and then it would kind of fade away and then it'd snow again. And it was just neat. I felt like the whole world was helping me. Uh-huh. I could totally envision this.
Oh man, that's so awesome. Something else that there is a kind of defining characteristic of Vale, and you mentioned it, like her sexuality is something that I don't think a lot of people know about, and I love that you made it something that you talk about at the beginning of the book, and then it becomes just, it's, I feel like it's really underrepresented. So can you kind of talk about her sexuality?
Because
it's something that I was really excited to be about.
Yes. So Vale is Aero Ace. So she's aromantic and she's asexual. She has a lot of support online, and that's mentioned at the beginning of the book. Like, online she can be who she is, but within her school, like, she experiences, like, just people bugging her for not dating, not being what you would expect. And that's just not her. Even the thing of her parents not understanding. So because I always start with characters, as I developed her, I just realized that's who she was. And so it was never a question of, like, she would, I don't know, that the book was about that. It was just so an innate part of her.
Right.
So that's not my experience. Mm-hmm. I needed to make sure I did that right.
Yeah.
And so getting sensitivity readers, a couple rounds of them, and when I would get back these notes of, oh my gosh, just seeing myself, and I was just like, that's it then.
Yeah.
And listening to them saying, you know, I like that she has this online experience, but sometimes this is how it is. And I'd just be like, great, let me rewrite that, send it back to you again.
Yeah.
And the sensitivity readers were so amazing. So at the end of the book, when I look at Vale and I see, like, reviews coming in, there was a review by someone who talked about that sense of isolation that Vale has, being this person who doesn't quite fit the norm and doesn't know how to share who she is, is totally parallel to her being lost in the woods. And I was like, oh, I love that. I just, like, oh my gosh, like, that's perfect.
Yeah, you're just like, it's exactly what I was.
Yeah, totally.
That's how I planned it. No, but it is, I feel like it's such an underrepresented, like, because now there's still not enough of them, but there are more LGBTQ+ books and there's getting better representation. But I, like, this was something where, like, I pride myself on being an ally and all that. Like, it was a segment of people that I was like, oh, I didn't even ever consider that. That's it's just such a amazing choice. What made you want to make that her
For me, versions? First of all, I think that you just you have to represent society as it is. Mm-hmm. And you just recognize that our society is so diverse. Do we see it?
Yes.
So I always, within my books, just try to make sure that what I'm writing is not some narrow kind of cookie cutter that, say, a lot of traditional media might show from the, like, 1980s or whatever. Like, it's just, you know, there's the rubber stamp. So I try to make real people. And I just look at my own lives. Like, I have a friend who describes herself as a gray ace. And I have a friend who is asexual. And I just, like, when I start writing, who is coming out? I'm like, oh, I'm feeling this. And I do this thing. I always talk about this whenever I do interviews. As I develop a character, I have a box and I put things in. So Vale's little tiny flashlight that has one battery is in that box.
Yeah.
And as I was putting stuff in that box, I was just feeling her character come together. And she was. She was Arrow Ace. Mm-hmm. And it also... and a couple reviewers noted this as well, it just removes that whole subplot of she needs to be saved.
Yes.
They're just best friends. Uh-huh. That's all the story is.
I literally, I put a note in here, I was like, I love the fact that when you set it up like that so early, I know there's not going to be a meet cute at any point. And like,
exactly.
Don't get me wrong, love romance books, love YA teen romance, but it was just like, a lot of times you'll be reading a YA book and you're like, all right, you'll get a description, like the female or male character will describe this person who will eventually become the love interest, and they'll just, it'll be like one line where they'll be like, oh, their eyes look like the sea, and oh, you guys are gonna do a thing at some point. And it was really refreshing just to be like, okay, there's not gonna be one of those, and also it would have been even more unrealistic, like, oh boy, I know that like we're facing a bear and broken legs, and but boy, you look great today. Like, I love it. They just removed it entirely.
Exactly. This is not a spoiler, but I love that there's a part where we need to see Vale at some point. So Ash looks at her and just kind of does a brief description, and she turns and she's like, do I have like a booger on my face? Uh-huh. She's like, because they're best friends, right? And so she's like rubbing her face. Because that's what you would do with your best friend.
Right.
You'd be like, what's up? We're lost in the woods. It's gross.
I literally, that's exactly what it is. And like a lot of times when you read books where there's like the most dire circumstances and then there's still talk. I'm like, come on. I'll be with my wife who I love to death. And like, if we're like hiking, neither of us is looking at the other one and be like, you look beautiful. It's like, no, we're sweaty messes or we smell or we're disgusting. I don't want, like, don't
exactly.
hold my hand when it's 1,000 degrees. Right there with you. Have you, you said your dad came, you know, kind of face to face with a bear? I guess
it's
not, they're a little bit taller, but
The bear was much taller than him.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But have you ever really experienced anything close to?
Okay, so yes, I've seen bears many times. Mm-hmm. If you're asking when was the closest I came to a bear, okay, so I have a cabin, which is like actually the house my great grandfather built in Waterton. And one day I was just coming home in the dark because I was like a waitress, and as I came to the cabin, something moved just in the trees beside our house, and my dad was just coming outside because he'd heard something, and then he just said, Danica, freeze. And I just stopped, and there was a bear kind of like right between the houses. Now, Waterton is not like a city, it's like 200 people there, so like the houses are far apart. And I just remember seeing my father get so serious, and then he took a step, so he was between us, and then he just said, walk very slowly into the house. And I did, and I could see as I went past that there, it was just a black bear, but it was a black bear, and they're also dangerous.
just the black bear.
It's true.
It's the best. That's definitely a sentence for someone who has interacted with bears before.
But yeah, it was very close. So like maybe 20 feet away, and I just remember my heart was pounding, and I'm just trying to get in really carefully, and then Dad just came in and closed the door. But I'd had these stories from him of just how quickly that situation can change. So that's the closest I got. But oh my goodness, there'd be so many times we'd be camping as kids, something would walk by, and my father would be like, get the dogs to be quiet. And the dogs are all trying to get out of the sleeping bags, and we're trying to like shut them up. So you always have this awareness, like you are not the strongest thing out in nature.
Yeah.
So I have a great respect, and I'm total naturalist. Like, I don't want people to hate bears. Like, we're in their environment, but you just have to give them space.
Yeah.
And I hope in the book, like, there is a bear that they run into, but it's not the bear's fault.
Right.
Like, I hope that comes across. Like, the bear's just getting ready for winter.
Yeah, he's not like a super villain or anything. He's just trying to live his life.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so funny. My wife and I went down with our friends a few years ago to Asheville, North Carolina, and it's in kind of the foothills of the, you know, mountains, and it's this beautiful area, and we were staying in a cabin and like an Airbnb, and my wife did research ahead of time about bears, and it was so funny because like she doesn't ever do this for other things, but she like I saw her doing research, and she's like, I respect bears too much to not know what to do.
Yes.
And we were there, and we got there the first day, and like, the Airbnb people met us and gave us the keys, and then the next morning, I went for a run. She hates that I do this, but we'll go somewhere, and I purposely get lost in the trails to, while I'm running, and she's like, you don't know where you are. But I come back, and the Airbnb person who owned the house was there in the morning again. I was like, we just saw you last night. We just checked in. Like, what's going on? She's like, there's a family of black bears that's just been, like, roaming around the neighborhood all night and all morning. So I just want to make sure you guys are okay.
Goodness.
And I was like, my wife just looks at me. She's like, maybe don't run anymore while we're here. And it's the same thing, though. She was like, she knew everything about grizzlies, everything about black bears. Like, even to this day, like, we'll have drinks with some friends. And someone will be like, hey, Alex, tell us the facts about black bears. And she's like, well.
Yes, exactly.
It goes the whole thing. Are these the types of books that you read when you were growing up? Like, did you like kind of adventure books, I guess?
I did, like, and I've read Hatchet as well. I read that, and then Brian's Winter, I read that as well. But no, I read everything.
Yeah.
We just, like, my whole family was, like, a family of readers, so Dad and I would, in particular, trade a lot. And so, yeah, I probably being able to kind of shift a little bit from, like, okay, I'm writing something that's sort of fandom-focused to survival didn't feel like a big leap, because I love reading everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Okay, so speaking of the fandom thing, because I know even though this is a book about not having technology being connected, there's some awesome, like, kind of like online community stuff at the beginning and the end and things like that, and I know that you've written about that extensively prior.
Yes.
So what is it to you about, and with the way social media and being connected can sometimes be a terrible thing, there's also really positive sides of it, so what is it about, like, gaming and online communities, things that you really appreciate?
Well, I'll tell you a very brief sad story. Like, so my dad died quite young, and I remember being just bereft, and I needed this connection that at home I was trying to help everyone, and I just remember finding that in online communities. Like, sometimes it's nice to just escape. Like, you have a TV show or you have a series of movies, and you just have people who are like, yes, let me, like, celebrate them, and you're just, like, fangirling together. There's such power in that. Like, that gives you this venue. So I love writing about that, because I think that's the reality for a lot of people, not just teens, but people. Yeah. Like, we connect. Like, there are so many people I even met today who are like, oh, I know you. And then, yeah, even you and I, like, yes. So I love that. And then, yes, there's some negatives as well, but hopefully the positives outweigh them. And I think part of it is how you approach it.
I was gonna say you strike me as a very positive person. Just
Thank
even
you.
Like you were mentioning earlier about, you know, you saw a review of a book that you absolutely loved. Like, I know a lot of authors won't even go on Goodreads just because it can be a little negative from time to time, or like people that tag authors in reviews, which is just, don't ever do that.
No.
But I mean, it does. You strike me as a person who sees the good.
I do, and I try to, like, I will be honest. If someone gives me a 1-star review and writes me like a thesis on why, I probably won't read it because I'm not, like, a masochist. But I remember getting some advice once, like, really don't read your 5-stars, don't read your 1-stars, but somewhere in the middle there is genuinely how people are reacting. And the reaction has been so good to Switchback that I go through and I look, and people have great ideas where I'm like, oh, I will do that for next book. You know, like, and you just, like, you get such insights. Or, like, the one, he's a teacher, the review I mentioned where he picked up, like, the isolation.
Yeah.
Societal isolation versus when you're in nature and you're isolated. And he actually, I think, is a principal at an online school. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I love that. Sure, that's what I planned.
Exactly what I meant. I'm so glad that you picked up on those subtle notes
exactly.
that I had in there.
So I love that stuff as well. And I do. I do read through, probably not everyone, but I do, especially if someone reaches out to me and if they have questions, I'm happy to answer them. And I just love interacting with readers.
Yeah.
It's good.
Well, that is something, you know, especially events like this, or Book Expo, and BookCon is this weekend. It's like, writing is such a solitary thing, and so when you do have the ability to meet people either in person or online, I always tell people, because everyone always asks me, like, you get to talk to so many authors, you know, how are they? I'm like, they get as excited to talk to readers as readers do to talk to them.
Yes, probably more so.
Yeah, because the readers didn't spend months and months sitting in a cabin writing the books, hoping someone would read them.
Exactly.
Are you planning on doing more books in this kind of style? Or?
Yes, I'm actually writing one right now. It is different. It's not lost in the mountains. In fact, they're not lost at all. But putting, again, two friends in a situation where they have to survive together. So I'm in the middle of writing that one. So it's just like, it just seems like that's a natural next step after Switchback. And again, you know, you can always throw in, like, you maybe you have a way to connect with your phone, but what if other things happen too?
Yeah, I do love putting them in a place where you can't access your phones, because it's such a difficult, like, I feel like people have to, if they're going to write books about teenagers nowadays and there's miscommunication, you almost have to be like, it's set in 1997, just so you can have, they can remove that MacGuffin of being like, they would have a cell phone, but this is like a perfect way of doing it. It's like, there's no service there.
Yeah, exactly.
So towards the end of our podcast, we do what we call the Nerd Nine, just nine kind of lighthearted questions.
Okay.
It used to be rapid fire, but we would get listeners that would write in, like, Adam, stop saying that because I go on tangents, as you probably noticed.
That's okay.
And they're like, please stop saying rapid fire because they're not. So the first one is, what's the last book you finished reading?
I think it is C.B. Lee's Not Your Villain. And which is awesome. Everybody should get her books. Like, they are so good.
What is your favorite place to read?
I love reading just in bed. And I have, like, my whole cozy nest with a million pillows with tea.
Okay. Do you remember the book that kind of made you fall in love with reading as a kid?
Okay, yes. And I couldn't read. So my dad, I feel like I'm talking a lot about my dad here.
No, okay.
So my dad was like total this like hippie parent. He was a geologist, and he would stay home in the winters because you can't very well go out in the middle of winter in Canada and be a geologist. And so he stayed home with me and he read me Gulliver's Travels, and which is totally not a kid's book, but that's what he was reading. So he read it aloud to me. And I remember being fascinated, also somewhat terrified by certain parts of that book. But I remember that book. I was like, I love this. And I was so looking forward to it. And he did all these voices. So I think, you know, really, it just like that one there, I really remember.
Being read to, and we've talked about this on our show before, but being read to by a parent when you're growing up, and especially a parent who like gets into it and it, like, really like paints a picture for you. I think it's why audiobooks are so popular now, is because it brings you back to that moment of being read to.
Yes.
I think it changes everything for a young reader. My mom was a third and fourth grade teacher for 40 years, and she has like the patience of a like a saint.
Yes.
But my dad would read to us at night, and he would just take a story. It would be like a Sesame Street book. And he would change the characters and, like, the story. We didn't ever realize it because we were, like, five. But I specifically remember those experiences of, like, him doing the voices and getting all excited about it, and made me want to read. And I feel like I do that in my head now when I hear characters still to this day.
Exactly. I do the same thing. And I think that's a sign you had a parent who read to you and, like, made it come alive.
Yeah. So what is a place you'd like to travel that you have not yet been to?
Oh, goodness. There are so many. I want to go to Iceland. I really do.
I'm like the third person. So I told two other authors, strangely, Cleveland, our airport, I have to do connecting flights like anywhere I go. I mean, we always connect to Chicago, but we have direct flights to Reykjavik.
What?
Randomly. Yeah, I don't know why. It's like one of the like Iceland Air or whatever it is. Randomly. So tons of people in Cleveland over the past, and they're really cheap flights.
Okay, so clearly I need to come visit Cleveland.
Yeah, so come visit Cleveland. We'll do Metro Park stuff and then just go right off to Reykjavik. Yeah.
That's cool.
It started like 3 years ago. It's just such a, I'm telling people that, it's such a random, like, why is that the one place? But because a lot of people, I guess, use Reykjavik as a jumping off to go to Europe. Basically.
Yes. So, yeah.
That's apropos of nothing, but it's a fun fact. What is your favorite holiday to celebrate?
Oh, I love the summer holidays. I know that's not an official holiday, so, like, I guess Labor Day. Like, I just love the summer. I really do.
Well, and I imagine you guys, even more so than us in Cleveland, don't get much of summer.
Yes, we kind of vary between like winter, second winter, and then we go right into like road construction, which is where we are right now.
Yeah,
and then we have a brief summer at the end of that.
That's amazing. Coffee or tea?
I'm going to say coffee, even though I mentioned tea. I mentioned tea when I'm reading because I'm going to bed afterwards.
That's understandable. Cats or dogs?
Oh, do I have to choose?
You can cop out and say no.
I'll take dogs, just because most recently I had a dog.
Okay.
My cat, who I had since I was like a kid, she passed away when she was like 25 or something. So yeah, but I love both.
We had one of those growing up too. Like, I'm a dog person, but we had a cat that was given to us by our grandfather or something.
Aww.
And she, like, same thing. She was like 23 and she was just ornery and all this. Like, she was ornery as a kitten, but she was just always like grumpy around the house. I was like, sorry for intruding on your space. What is your favorite food?
I love salad. Actually, anybody who follows me will know that because I post all these random pictures of salad. I am capable of making other things, but I will choose salad over everything.
As a vegetarian, salad. I respect that. So salad.
Thank you. Yeah, I do. I love salad. By the way, I could make you an amazing salad.
Okay, we're going to talk about that when we stop recording. And then the last one of these, if you could have dinner with anybody alive or dead, who would you pick?
Okay. Oh, that's a tricky one.
I get sassed by authors a lot for this because I don't tell them it ahead of time and they're like, this is such a big question.
Okay, I'll choose one alive. Okay, so my alive one, I would choose the Dalai Lama. I actually would. I would love to talk to him because I just think he has a really fascinating view and I think it's really positive. Like, I just get positive vibes from him. Mm-hmm. So if it's someone alive, that's who I would choose.
Talked to you for a half hour now makes perfect sense.
Yes.
Okay, last question for you. What do you hope readers take away from Switchback?
I hope that readers, when they read it, like you described, they just get totally caught up in an adventure. That's what I want for them, to just enjoy it. When they walk away from it, I want them to feel like they were there on the mountain and that they got to experience the majesty of, like, the Rockies. And they're like, whew, glad that didn't happen to me.
That is perfect. Danny, thank you so much for joining
us
today.
Thank you. That was awesome.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Rakuten Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.